Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You have tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. We have a wonderful paradigm shifter today whose book, when I read it, and this is, I think, your seventh or eighth book, really shifted me inside. And that's the work a lot of us want to do in this time of shift, where we're apparently going to become much more whole or much more enlightened, or as Hazel Courtney says, much more coherent. Welcome to the show, Hazel, all the way from England.
Oh, Veronica, thank you, and thank you for having me on.
Oh, I'm just delighted to meet you, and I'm really enjoying this book, which I haven't quite finished, but I certainly will finish it. You have been a health reporter for a long time, but it really shifted when you had your what you're calling a spiritual emergency in 98, right?
Yeah, it did. But I'd love, if you don't mind, it would be marvelous if I could just set the scene for your listeners, because I think it's really important that they should understand at least part of what happened to me so that they can understand who I am and how I came to be in this place now and writing all these science spiritual books.
Great. Please do. Go ahead and tell us where you've been.
Okay. Well, way back in 1998, I was a weekly columnist for an alternative health columnist for the Sunday Times newspaper, which is one of Britain's premier broadsheets. It's pretty much similar to the New York Times. And on April the 8th, 1998, which was just before Easter, I walked into Harrods, which is a very famous store in London, to buy some Easter eggs for the family who were coming over that weekend. And as I walked into the turnstile that used to be in the bread hall, it got stuck, and in those few seconds, I couldn't go forward, and I couldn't go back, and it was as if this enormous energy flooded through my body with all these electrical tremors, and I had huge pains in my chest and in my head, and within 3 or 4 seconds, Veronica, I had a voice shouting in my head that I knew wasn't coming from me, Hazel. And so obviously I was pretty scared, and I thought I'd had some kind of massive heart attack or something, and that maybe I was hearing my mother, who's been in spirit for a long time. I didn't know what was going on. But anyway, they managed to get me to my doctor within 15 minutes, and they were waiting for me with all of the heart monitoring equipment, and they put me on the floor, and they attached all the heart monitors, and they were playing my heartbeat down the phone to a cardiologist. And in those seconds, as Brian was doing that, I was crying and I was blurting out farewell messages to my husband and my daughter, because anyone who's had a near-death experience and that truly believes that they only have minutes or seconds to live, it really does focus your mind on what's important. Mm-hmm. But after I'd given Brian those messages, I suddenly realized, as I started to calm down, that I could feel what he was thinking in his head. And not only that, I could hear in my head what the cardiologist was saying to him. And so as I told Brian what was happening and what he was thinking and what the doctor was saying, obviously Brian, my doctor, was extremely shocked. And obviously I already knew that my heart was fine. And Brian went on to take my blood pressure and a whole load of other stuff. And he said, well, Hazel, you know, I don't know what's going on, but whatever it is, you better go home and have a cup of tea. Because in England, you know, a cup of tea is our answer to absolutely everything. And so when I got home, considering the enormous shock that I had just undergone in the previous couple of hours, I looked completely different. My eyes were a different color, and I looked much younger, which to me was hugely surprising considering the shock that I'd just undergone. Yeah. And so when my husband came home, obviously he was very concerned, and he said, Hazel, what on earth's the matter? And I all these words started tumbling out of my mouth, and I said, oh, I'm going to be very special. And he said, what do you mean special? And I said, oh, I'm going to be able to do amazing things. And of course my husband's eyes were like out on stalks. But anyway, as the night wore on, my brain felt like it was cooking. It felt as though I was online to a supercomputer, in that anything that I needed to ask, and obviously I had a lot of questions that night, I seemed to automatically receive multiple responses. But because I didn't know which was true, if any. And then the next day I found that, and I love food, I'm very thin, but I couldn't, it was as if I was no longer being allowed to eat physical food. And I kept telling people, friends and my secretary and my family, to look into my eyes and they would know who I was. But of course I didn't know then who the ultimate I was and who we all are, but of course I do now. But anyway, then...
Were they shocked by it? Were they uncomfortable when you said, look into my eyes and you'll...
Oh, God, they were very shocked, but they were even more shocked when I started. At one point, I levitated.
Woo.
I became totally telepathic. I was giving intense healing through my eyes. I was mind reading. I was seeing people's potential futures. And I also discovered on the Saturday that I'd had a walk-in. In other words, the discarnate spirit of someone very famous, actually, who had died, had walked into my energy field in that moment in Harrods. And so imagine, Veronica, that one moment you're a journalist, you're a mother, you're a busy wife, you're going about your life, writing a column every week, and the next minute you are having all these unbelievable phenomena happening around you and to you. Mm. And what happened was, in the end, I knew I couldn't call my normal doctor anymore. And in the end, a friend who was a, and still is actually, a nutritional physician based in London, he actually came up to Birmingham, where I was living at that time, over Easter, and he moved in with us. And on the Easter Saturday afternoon, with him present, I actually left my physical body because the shock was so overwhelming. I just couldn't stand it anymore because I also developed the most intense fever, and I was alternating with fever and freezing cold and losing weight. I'd got this spirit speaking through me, to me. I was affecting electrical equipment and also being affected by electrical equipment. I wasn't being allowed to use the telephones. They would just automatically disconnect. So this was a huge experience that went on for several months. And when I was outside my physical body and I was sort of on the ceiling of our bedroom looking down at myself, and by the way, there was this enormous snowstorm going on outside, a really freaky storm with lots of thunder and lightning. I mean, the drama was just surreal.
And the snowstorm at Easter time is a pretty big deal, isn't it?
Well, of course, now I know it's the traditional time of death and rebirth. Mm-hmm. But it was several months before I realized and was told that I'd been through a major spiritual emergency, a term that was coined by Stanislav Grof, who's one of the world's greatest authorities on spiritual awakenings. And a spiritual emergency is when a spiritual awakening becomes a physical crisis. And so before we even continue, I would say to people, nobody needs to go through what I went through to, you know, become more spiritually aware. And of course, once it had all grounded itself out, several months later, as a journalist, I thought, well, there have to be logical, explanations as to why I was telepathic. How could I smell and see energies? I could feel energies. How was I able to see potential futures? Why was I making ash? There were hundreds and hundreds of questions in my mind. And so,
wait a minute, you were making ash like Sai Baba, yes, the Vibhuti?
Yes.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was quite a big experience. And so what happened was that I then went on a journey to, first of all, find scientists who could verify what I had been through. And the first scientist I turned to was Professor Gary Schwartz, who's at the University of Arizona, because for me it was very important to get some kind of validation that the claims I was making in the book that I wrote of the story, it's called Divine Intervention, it's just been issued in the States. I wanted to know that I really had heard from the spirit of this specific person. And so Gary Schwartz who's done brilliant work. His book's called The Afterlife Experiments, and he's done amazing work showing that consciousness survives physical death. And when I first contacted Gary, if I hadn't been a writer with the Sunday Times, he would have just slammed down the phone. But eventually he said to me, he made me laugh. He said, Hazel, do you know how many people claim to be the reincarnation of Jesus or Elizabeth I or whatever it is? He said, claiming is one thing, proving is another. And so he said, if you're willing to put your money where your mouth is, he said, come to Arizona and let me test you. And I learned a lot on that first trip to Arizona. And Gary did several tests with me with some very, very highly accredited mediums. And in fact, he was so amazed by what happened in those trials that he went on to write the foreword for two of my books.
Oh, wow. So how do the mediums test you?
Oh, right. Well, what happened was Gary had invited two very specialist mediums. One of them is Alison Dubois, who went on to make the series Medium, which was based on her life. And I had never heard of Alison Dubois. And there was another lady whose name I can't now quite remember. But anyway, again, a very brilliant medium. And I was told to report to Gary's home at a certain time. And then each medium was brought in one at a time, totally separately. And they were asked to tune into any spirit that they felt was in the room with us. And the whole thing was filmed, timed, and so on. And both of them independently basically told me my entire story. And they named the person, which left me in tears because for me it was validation. And then several months later, another famous medium, Gary, was filming in America while I was in England. And Gary went on to do what's known as a double blind trial. When this spirit came through again, when I was not present and when the medium didn't even know of my existence. And I mean, those trials for me, I mean, it doesn't matter whether other people believe me or not, but for me, it was great validation. But Gary helped me to understand that what we think of as being solid matter is little more than empty space. So you and I might think that this world is solid, but in fact, this world is 99.999% empty space. Mm-hmm. And that when the Big Bang happened 13.7 billion years ago, it came from an explosion of light. And when that so-called Big Bang happened, the universe was less that if you'd have been able to hold the universe in your hand, Veronica, in those first seconds after the energy release happened, you would have been, it was less than the size of an atom. And you can get a million atoms behind one human hair. And so if we had been around at that moment, we could have held this universe in the palm of our hands. And so then when atoms started to form, like 380,000 years after this Big Bang, after this release of energy, and eventually many millions of years later we came along, I never got it when people like Deepak Chopra used to say to me, we are all from one source. And Gary really helped me to understand that at a certain level, we really are all from one source, and that we are little more than recycled energy and information, and that we are all capable of far more than we think we are. And so,
but if we're recycled from old information, how are we capable of infinitely more?
Because we're evolving. We are all part of God, and all parts make the whole. And so God is becoming... The way that God expands, in fact, like there are so many scientists I'd love to mention, but Bill Tiller, who's one of the world's greatest physicists, who gave me the title for this book, the new book, that is, he explained to me that, sorry, I've just lost the track of what I was saying there. Can you just repeat your question again? Sorry, I get so excited about all this stuff. Bill told me that what we think of as being God, which we're not conscious enough to even begin to understand what God is, he said that the way that God is growing in coherence is experiencing itself at every level of being. And so we're all part of God, and all parts make the whole. So we are becoming more enlightened, and we are adding to the knowledge that God has through every single action that we take every day of our lives.
So even though we're made of recycled, what did you call it? Recycled
energy and information.
Yes, we are. That recycled information is capable of unravel or developing and unfolding and creating. Is that right?
Well, not only that, but all the atoms that ever were or will be were birthed. All the energy that ever was or will be was released at that moment of the Big Bang. That, remember, was distinctly very, very, very small indeed. Mm-hmm. And so from there, incredible though it may sound, the universe has gone on and on and on and on expanding. And the fundamental unit of organized matter in this energy is the atom. And atoms are what's known as a feedback system. Atoms have memory. You are made of atoms. I'm made of atoms. Everything in this universe that appeared solid is made from atoms. And so if you think about people who go to the pyramids or touch Stonehenge, or they hold on to a watch that you have worn for a long time, and they give you specific information by holding that object, what they are doing is they are retrieving the energy and information that is inside those atoms. So what I'm trying to get to, the core of the message here is, all the information that you will ever need is inside you now.
Mm-hmm.
Every atom of your being has been here since the beginning of linear time. And so we are consciousness with matter added. Mm-hmm. And so we are spirit having a physical experience. And so who we really are is... that information is within every atom within you. So this is why all of the enlightened masters that I've ever interviewed, and believe me, I've met quite a few, say if you really want to know who you ultimately are, then go within.
Mm-hmm. Now, the word coherence, because this wonderful book you've written is called Countdown to Coherence, and it's... subtitle is A Spiritual Journey Toward a Scientific Theory of Everything. You've given us a very good, bigger than thumbnail for that. But the word coherence, I would like you to explain what that is in this context.
Okay, well, coherence in the dictionary term means everything coming together at one. And when I went back to Arizona, to Phoenix, to interview Bill Tiller, who spent... more than 50 years studying consciousness and matter, most of it at Stanford University. When I said to Bill over breakfast, I said, Bill, what is God to you? And he said to me, Hazel, in the beginning, everything, all things, all levels of energy were one. In the beginning, everything was totally coherent, which is what God is. And when I said to Bill, he then went on to explain that every now and again, in great epochs of our time, this pure coherence that he would call God decoheres and recoheres. So he believes, and many other scientists also now believe, that as this decohering occurred, that societies would have been formed first at the level of mind, and these would have been highly coherent societies, non-physical societies such as Mu, and that as this decohering continued, other societies at the emotion level domain would have formed, and they would have been societies such as Lemuria, which he also believes was non-physical. But then as it went on and on and on, He believes that societies such as Atlantis were formed that then literally intended this release of energy and birthed our physical universe. So to some people, they would say, well, this woman is totally off the wall. But when you consider what I was telling you earlier, that the birth of this universe was less than the size of an atom, and that you can get a million atoms behind a human hair, and when you have people like theoretical physicist at New York University, Michio Kaku, saying to create a universe similar to ours, which would only need a ridiculously small amount of matter, net matter, as little as an ounce, it really makes you think. And so Bill then went on to say to me, and I said to Bill, well, where is this decohering going? And he said, well, consciousness has decohered about as far as it can get. He said, we've actually reached the bottom of the barrel. And I thought, well, with what's going on around us in the last few years, in the last 100 years or so, I said, well, I have to agree with that.
So is that like the dissonance and the everything working against each other, all of that kind of thought process? And
Well, I mean, I just think judgment, you know, the wars that are going on, the splits in religion, the dogma that's gone on for centuries. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Bill said to me, I said, well, where are we headed now, Bill? I said, give me some good news. And so he said, well, actually, he said, we're now moving into a whole new epoch. And he said, we're actually going to be recohering again. And of course, this light went on in my head. He said, consciousness is now going to start on a great journey on its way home. And I said, well, where's home? And he said, back to coherence. And that's what gave me the title of this book. But most crucially, I'd also spoken to a guy called Professor Frederick Travis, who's at the Center for Cognition and Consciousness in Iowa. And Frederick has spent 30-odd years and published many papers. He studied the science of enlightenment. And Fred had told me that the scientific difference between a truly enlightened man or woman and the rest of us is that their brains are totally coherent. Hmm. And basically what that means, Veronica, is that the left side of their brain, the right side of their brain, and their whole brain are acting as one unit. In other words, your brain is totally synchronized, as mine was for a short time. But the trouble is, as Bill agreed, it's maintaining that coherence that is the secret to enlightenment. And as I was swinging wildly way back in 98 from total panic to total bliss, I now know that, you know, highly evolved, enlightened men and women, they have spent decades or many lifetimes learning infinite wisdom. Hmm. They have spent decades learning how to master their physical bodies, their emotional bodies, their mental bodies, their etheric bodies. And so if people think that they, oh, enlightenment's really cool, you know, and I want to go down to the Amazon and take some herbal ayahuasca or crack or whatever it is that they want to use, and I can have a kundalini experience like Hazel did in Harrods. But the point is, if you have, you've got all these kids that are using crack and cannabis and social drugs, and they're trying ayahuasca, and they have no idea what they're playing with here. And if you open up the kundalini spontaneously as mine did in Harrods in a highly immature consciousness, which mine was and remains, then, you know, it can be a very, very, very unsettling experience. And so many people, Veronica, are in psychiatric units who have had these types of spiritual breakthroughs. And the medical establishment is only just beginning to understand what it all means.
Hmm. So how can people you know, how can our listeners, for example, use this information, knowing that we can't really go into, unless you really believe in multidimensional doodah, we can't really go into many, many lives to become wise enough. How can we use the tools to become at least some coherent at this point, or catch the wave of the countdown to coherence, as Bill Tiller was talking about?
Right. Well, what Travis has found is that as people, for instance, meditate, you tune into what's known as the vacuum level of reality, which is like the space between your thoughts. So what you're tuning into is the underlying field of intelligence that we exist inside of. And when you couple with these other levels of reality, these normally invisible levels of reality, then almost anything becomes possible. But most importantly, an area in the center of your brain called the thalamus, it starts to ramp up. And the thalamus in the center of the brain, we're not talking about the thymus here, which is in the chest. As the thalamus wakes up, it's linked to all the senses, sight, touch, smell, hearing, and so on. And so as you meditate regularly, or as you chant regularly, sound can also help the brain become more coherent. Being kinder to people can help the brain become more coherent. And just having the intention to couple with what people call God in itself will help your brain to become more coherent. And so what people notice slowly over time is that their gut intuition becomes more strong. They're more likely to be in the right place at the right time. Someone might be telling them something, but in their gut or in their heart, they might be thinking, this is not for me, this is not real. And so you learn to live your truth more. And then, in other words, when I was in Harrods and my Kundalini blew, I could hear more, smell more, see more, and so on. But the trouble is, it all happened too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So the safest way to do this is to keep going with your spiritual practices. And when you do this with a heartfelt intention, you are heading towards coherence and you are heading towards who you really are.
Would you say that the time is right, Hazel? Would you say that this is what's happening on our planet, in our species right now, and that we can actually, for example, learn the coupling, which I read was the kind of the different dimensions, putting two dimensions together, that we can learn to do that more easily now because of the way our trend is toward coherence?
I think that, you see, we've always had this ability, Veronica, but now we've got the science to go with it. So, for instance, what Tiller has found is that a sustained, focused intention will and does create a physical reality. So the truth of the matter is that what you think about the most is what comes into your life. And Bill has found that there are two very distinct levels of reality. There's this dense world that we see around us. You know, if you hit a rock, it hurts. It's what's known as the electric atom molecule physical world. So that's our world. But what Bill has discovered and verified, that there is a second, normally invisible to us level, which he calls the magnetic information wave level. Previously, we've always referred to this as the etheric level, which travels faster than the speed of light and is outside of linear space-time, but it can be influenced by our consciousness. And he's found that when you sit in meditation and create what, you know, until now shamans have called a conditioned space, a sacred space, that you can link with these invisible realms of reality, and they can then affect this reality. This reality is like movable. We are creating our futures as we go along. And so when I, say, for instance, interviewed Sai Baba, who's now, of course, passed away, and when he manifested for me, he manifested some ash for me, and he manifested a diamond ring for the gentleman that I was with. I wish he'd done it the other way around, by the way.
I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah. But in other words, what Sai Baba and many others have done through the centuries, They are not creating something from nothing. What they are doing is organizing energy in such a coherent way that it can come from that other level of reality into this level of reality. So in other words, the non-physical can come into the physical. And this is so important for people to get. So the more you live a life where you have less judgment from other people, because remember, Veronica, I said earlier that we exist inside the mind of God, whatever God is. So every thought you have contributes to the whole. Every action you take contributes to the whole. Thoughts are things. Mm-hmm. We are beings of frequency inside a physical body. Everything outside of our reality, our normal physical world, is based upon frequencies. Mm-hmm. And so every time you send out, this is how prayer works, you know, and telepathy. What these people are doing is, with their sustained focused intentions, they are tuning into this magnetic information wave level. So Bill has found a different channel for information to pass through that has previously never been heard of. So for me, the most crucial thing in all of this is that science and spirituality, gifts that have been known for thousands of years, we now have emerging scientific evidence to show how they're possible.
And that's wonderful.
This is, to me, it means, I mean, when Fred told me that spontaneous brain functioning was the basis, the scientific basis for enlightenment, I like whooped with joy, you know, because here I had a logical explanation for what had happened to me. And it's happening to many others, too.
Well, and I want to get back to that. But also, just let's not bypass the whole thing about the secret and the bleep, which you talk about in the book. And a lot of people want to know why their manifestations haven't worked as well, you know, when they learned from the secret and they learned from the bleep.
Right. Well, I think that Bill Tiller really helped me with this. And he said, the thing is, when you have, we all have about 40,000 thoughts a day. And those
That's a thoughts, lot.
It is. And if you look at the majority of your thoughts, remember I said, what you give out is what you get back. And Bill said that all of us have around us what he calls an energy grid. Other people call it the aura or whatever you want to call it. And he said, if you look at the major part of your thoughts, that's what attaches very firmly to your energy grid. And so that's what comes back into your life. And he said, if you, as soon as you give a lot of energy to something, have you noticed, Veronica, how if you really start to panic about something, the panic grows?
Yes, indeed. And things fall apart.
Mm-hmm. You know, yes. And so, in other words, if a person thinks, okay, the secret's great, and I'm really going to imagine this, 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 and this, but if in their heart of hearts they don't think they deserve what they are concentrating so hard on, then what that energy will stay attached to their grid, saying, you're not good enough, you're not thin enough, you're not rich enough, you're not happy enough, you're never going to find the right partner. So what you have to do is, as best you can, is stop giving energy to the stuff that you don't want, that will then, if you like, just dissipate from your grid. And then you have to start attaching the new stuff to your grid, and that's what will eventually come into your being. Now, what enlightened men and women have done, they can do that instantaneously. The rest of us, like, you know, we really have to work on it.
We have to learn it, don't we?
We really do. And the other thing that's so important is that pure coherence is catching. And so where you have, for instance, and this is, again, there have been more than 50 accredited scientific studies, where you have a group of meditators in, they've done it in places like Kosovo, Bosnia, Palestine, America. They've done it in many places around the world. And they've found that when you have, say, a group of 200 meditators, the effect is amplified. Like if it's just one of you, you know, you're just sending out your little signals, which is great. But the more of you that there are sitting, doing nothing more than having an intention to awaken this underlying field of intelligence, which we live inside of, which people can call God, then the effect has a huge effect. And they found that, for instance, in places like Kosovo, Palestine, Miami, there's less crime, less people were shot, less people were injured. There were less actual moments of conflict. Hmm. Coherence is catching. Hmm. Now, so the more you can work on yourself and become at peace with yourself, then the more this peace will, grow in your home, grow in your work environment, grow in your lives, and others will start to realize that you are changing, and they will catch it too. And that's how we're going to change this world, one person at a time.
Well, I want to say, reading your book, I'm an intuitive as well, so I'm pretty accustomed to energy and frequency and so on. But reading your book, which is so many interviews with so many different people who are extremely wise and right way up there on the cutting edge of consciousness, I would say, I got these zaps and tingles and awakenings all the way through the book. So I think that what you're passing on, you can also pass it on through a book, is what I'm saying. Okay?
Well, that's incredibly kind of you. But I mean, for instance, one of the things that really made me laugh, I just have to tell you about this. Do you remember me saying that I was on the ceiling of my bedroom looking down at my body?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. And I obviously was very aware that me, Hazel, was still gone on, but like my body was down below me. And one of the scientists I interviewed, a wonderful shaman scientist, Alberto Velodo, who has spent 25 years studying the shamans in the Amazon, and he's become a fully enlightened man. He told me that at the moment of physical death, the information in your seven chakras upload into your eighth chakra, which is above your head. And you then go off because you're now outside, you're operating, your consciousness is now outside and no longer constrained by physical space-time. And he said this eighth chakra goes off and you can then reincarnate into any period in time you choose. Now that really blew my mind. And when I eventually went on to interview theologian Dr. Michal Ledwith, who told me about some ancient scrolls showing that Jesus did become enlightened in India and Tibet, and his is a magical chapter. But when I was talking to Michal, who used to head up Maynooth College in Ireland, it's a big theological part of the Irish University, I was so excited. I said, Dr. Ledwith, what do you think about this eighth chakra? And he said, Hazel, he said, there are currently 20,000 registered religions on this planet. He said, 40,000 children die every day of hunger. And he said, there are approximately 20 major conflicts going on at any one time. So he said, when we've sorted out all those problems, he said, then let's start worrying about your eighth chakra. And basically what he was saying is, don't sweat the small stuff. We have some very big issues that we need to deal with on this planet. So when I've been to interview enlightened people, and some of their followers say, you can only burn one candle when you're meditating, you must do it during daylight, you should only do this, you can't do that, it's all rubbish. As long as you have an intention and a heartfelt intention to place your ego into service for the whole rather than thinking what's in it for me, then automatically you might not like win the lottery tomorrow, but what you need to fulfill your purpose in being here will be shown to you. And that's what's happened to me throughout the last 12 years. They have not been an easy 12 years. My God, they haven't. And there's been a lot of soul searching. And I'm sure like you, there are many times when I go into my garden and I absolutely curse and swear at those guys up there,
yeah.
But, things may not be perfect at this level, but at a core level, everything is perfect, but we just don't know that. And if we want to return to being part of that, who we really are, which is God, that's who we all are. Or we're all part of that and all parts make the whole. I keep reiterating that message because I actually came to a moment in time where I was actually able to say, I am God. And, you know, I remember that many, many enlightened people, such as Jesus, have said, everything that I can do, you will also do, and more so. Mm-hmm. And they were all trying to tell us that we're all capable of what they were capable of, but we didn't believe it. And so now that this science is coming to the fore, and we think, wow, it's not just purely enlightened people that can do all this stuff. We can all do all of this stuff. And if we all woke up and had the kind of experience I had all in one day, then the world would obviously be in a terrible mess. So I think that anyone...
And why would it? Because we would all be panicking, freaking out, trying
to... Well, I mean, obviously, you know, you go from being a half-asleep person to a fully awake person, but the trouble is you don't know how to deal with it, and you don't have the wisdom to deal with
it. So there isn't a coherence, right?
Oh, yeah, I was so decoherent at times, it begs belief, but at other times I was in total bliss. Hmm. As I said earlier, the point is integrating it and maintaining it.
Tell me about your back problem, because you were talking about maintaining it, and you said that Gary Renaud said, who wrote The Disappearing Universe, said all you need to be doing is loving God and forgiving. Is that what it is? And he said you could heal your back with that and intention. Is that right?
It is. Gary Renaud was the guy that started me on this journey, and his book, The Disappearance of the Universe, basically says that we're a holographic projection from an ego mind that separated itself from God. So we think, or most of us think, that this reality is the only one and that it's real.
Okay.
And Gary believes that if we could all forgive ourselves and each other 100%, and that if we could all stop carrying so much burden of guilt, that this universe will actually disappear, because it will merge back into, if you like, pure coherence. Hmm. But the point is that when I was in that very, very heightened state, do you remember earlier I said that I think as you grow in coherence, you're more in the right place at the right time?
Yes, indeed.
Well, and I think you don't sweat the small stuff. And so when I hurt my back 5 years ago, I was rushing for a plane. I was very stressed. It was pouring with rain. I was definitely not meditating at the time. And I fell really badly onto my spine. And so I was in the wrong place at the wrong time in a not very coherent state.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'd have been meditating far more regularly, which I stopped doing for quite a long time, but I do now, then you become much calmer. Your hormones, you don't make as much cortisol and adrenaline, so you deal with stress better. Remember, I said if you're coupled with this other invisible level of reality, you are more guided to be in the right place at the right time. And you definitely don't sweat the small stuff, and you definitely don't get stressed about missing a plane. And so what I'm trying to say to people is that when you have the intention to love yourself, love others, and live a more coherent life, then if I'd have been in that space, I would never have hurt my back in the first place.
Hmm.
But I'm in a physical body. We're all spirit having a physical experience. So now I have damaged my spine. And if I were completely coherent again, which obviously I'm doing my utmost to become, then yes, with the power of thought alone, it is possible to heal the back. But you'd have to be in a very, very highly coherent state to be able to do that.
Hmm. And that's the big challenge these days, isn't it?
Well, that is the big challenge, because obviously after I'd been in that heightened state, it was like winning the spiritual lottery.
Hmm.
And then being back on it, you know, it was really like for a time I'd been sitting on a pinhead on the top of Mount Everest, so I could really sense and see the bigger picture.
Hmm.
But then once it had all gone away, because at the time when it was all happening, I thought, oh my God, I wish this would all stop. But once it had all gone, of course, I grieved for 10 years and I wanted it all back.
I bet you
did. And I was very angry that it had gone. But it's like being back at base camp, looking up, thinking, how the devil do I get back up there again?
Yeah.
And as every enlightened man and woman has said to me, Hazel, if you want to go back there, because many people have, if you like, fleeting moments of this pure coherence, this pure bliss, when they merge with what I call God. And they, you know, then you spend the rest of your life trying to find it again. But if you want to attain those kind of states, you have to start from rock bottom again. You have to eat a good diet, think good thoughts as much as you can, place your ego into service of the whole as much as you can. You know, we're all human here. You know, we shouldn't beat ourselves up too much. We can't live on carrots all the time. I mean, I love apple pie. And then you have to meditate. You have to couple with these other levels of reality. And you have to have the intention of becoming who you really are. And so those that are going faster along the process can help others. But there is so much misinformation out there. And so you have young people who maybe they have very impressionable minds and they're looking for someone to follow. They maybe have tried or dabbled in drugs. And so their minds, their energy fields are wide open. And so anyone can just get in and give them all kinds of information and, you know, mold these young people's minds. You know, you hear all the time of, there was just this week, someone in the States who said that the world was going to end like a couple of days ago, and of course it didn't.
No.
And he has followers that are lawyers, bankers, you know, doctors, and you think...
And people got rid of all of their worldly possessions knowing they're going to be gone.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, if you get rid of all your worldly possessions, you become part of the problem instead of part of the solution. Everything has to be about balance.
Mm-hmm.
And if something sounds too good to be true, then it is too good to be true. And if something doesn't sound right to you, I mean, I'm never going to say to someone, you must believe what's in my book. This is a journey that I have undergone. The interviews I've got from wonderful scientists are their research and their beliefs. And anyone can choose to say this is not correct, I don't believe it. And I think that we all resonate on our specific frequency wavelengths. You know, we all have our own unique energy field, which is as unique to you as your DNA.
And it gives us a unique truth at times too, doesn't it?
It does. And mm-hmm. I really feel that if people don't resonate with this stuff, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do resonate with it, even now, I've read my own book maybe 20 times and I wrote it and spent years researching it. But in reading it, when I read it 2, 3, and 4 times, I still am having aha moments, because as Fred Travis said to me, what you get out of something depends on the level of consciousness that is experiencing the words that you have written. So we're all God from our own perspective.
Well, and I tend to trust the things I'm reading when I get those kind of electrical responses to it. You know, I know that something in me is resonating with it.
Well, that's so wonderful. That's so kind of you. And I mean, I think that a wonderful chapter for me is later in the book where I teach people how to measure their levels of coherence, their current level of consciousness. And I interviewed a marvelous enlightened man called Dr. David Hawkins, who wrote a book called Power versus Force.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the guy who did a lot of scientific research into kinesiology, which is a form of muscle testing. So at a soul level of being, you already know what your body needs. You already have many answers inside of you, which we talked about earlier. And he calibrated that the most enlightened person that had ever lived on the planet would measure 1,000. And he worked out that our current level of coherence is 208. And that most people, unless they have an intention to grow spiritually, can only grow about 5 points in each lifetime.
Oh, my.
So,
that's not enough. But,
no, but if we place our ego into service for the whole, then we can grow many more points. But I found it fascinating that he said to me that, for instance, he places unconditional love at a calibration of 500, but fear is something like 100, and that a single truly enlightened man or woman can transmute all the negative energy produced by all of humankind. And so when you hear things like that, I think don't be envious of truly enlightened men or women, because they are the way showers, and they're helping us to stay, if you like, in this physical reality until we can all, I mean, we may have to come back many lifetimes to get it, but at least to get people started on the spiritual journey, that in itself is a miracle.
Because once you're on it, you can keep unraveling or unfolding, can't you?
Well, you just keep questioning. You know, I mean, I've still got a million questions. You know, my journey has got a long way to go. You know, I'm just part the way along. And as I go along, I'm just sharing this information with others.
Well, it's so interesting. A lot of people have near-death experiences and so on. And you explain at some point in the book that sometimes spiritual emergencies are created by a distressed or perhaps broken nervous system. Would you say that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you can have a spiritual emergency triggered by ongoing chronic negative stress. Mm-hmm. I've met many people who say husbands have been in hospital having had a stroke, and these women have had to leave work. They're coping with a sick husband and going to hospital every day and so on, and they've had these spiritual breakthroughs. I've met one woman who'd had a couple of miscarriages, and she was just at rock bottom, and her kundalini blew in a department store the same as mine. And in fact, she ended up many years in a psychiatric unit because her husband wasn't as kind as mine is, and he had her committed against her will.
Oh, my.
And I've heard of women who've had kundalini awakenings in during orgasm when giving birth, which is what happened to Stan Groff's wife. She had a kundalini. Hers blew as she gave birth to one of her children. And it can also be triggered by an intense communication with a spiritual master. Mm-hmm. I had a doctor who rang me a few weeks ago, and his wife, who's a pharmacist, she had been praying and praying and praying and praying to become enlightened. She'd stopped eating food. Her chemistry, her brain chemistry was completely up the wall. And she too had this sort of major spiritual breakthrough. And we spent a whole day. And in the end, we couldn't talk her down. We couldn't make her eat. And she was threatening to kill herself because she knew she was immortal at a certain level. Mm-hmm. And in the end, we had to have her committed because, you know, if someone knows who they are, where they are, what the date and time is, and if they are aware or their relatives are aware of what's happening to them, then you have to give them grounding foods. You have to give them the right vitamins and minerals to nourish their physical body. But if people start threatening to harm themselves, or if they think that they can go and kill President Obama, which, you know, a lot of them do, or whatever, if they become a threat to themselves and others, then you need medical help.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's really, it is an emergency then, isn't it? Unfortunately, we have to draw to a close, and I'd love to just pick your brains forever here. One thing I want to bring up is you talked about, this is a real shift in perspective, but the Egyptian relation or coupling of the electrical and the magnetic, do you remember that?
I do, and that's what I was saying earlier, that Tiller has found that there are two levels of reality, the electric atom molecule and the magnetic information wave level. And it was later on, I read in a channel book that in the ancient Egyptian mystery schools, they said that the marriage of the electric world and the magnetic world, once initiates had learned to couple between these worlds, that this was one of the greatest secrets that humanity could learn. And of course, Bill Tiller has now finally given us the science to show that this is true. So,
and coupling really means just being able to merge those two fields and forces, or being able to traverse the boundary between them, or?
Well, what it means is that truly coherent men and women are literally walking between worlds. Mm-hmm. There is existing half in this electric atom molecule physical world, and half in the higher dimensional worlds of which we are also a part. So there's no longer any separation.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ancient Egyptians in the mystery schools, they knew this. And so what I'm trying to say is we are all far more than we think we are. If you imagine that our universe, which is billions of light years across, if you imagine that it was only, say, 2,500 miles across, and with your physical eyes, we can only see about 1 inch of our physical reality. All the rest is hidden from our physical eyes. But as we wake up, we can see more, hear more, smell more, touch more. And these realities
are
beginning to merge. The veils are lifting.
Yay! Well, thank you so much. I really recommend to everybody listening to read probably all your books, but today we're talking about Countdown to Coherence by Hazel Courtney, and I watched some of your YouTubes. They're very interesting as well.
Thank you very, very much.
And thank you, Hazel. Would you like to give your website?
Oh, I'd love to. I keep forgetting all this necessary commercial stuff.
This is the Earth Plane stuff.
Oh, I know. It's www.hazelcourtney, and the Courtney is CourtneyY.com. And all my books are available on Amazon. They're available on Kindle, and they should be in some good bookshops too. So I hope people will read them because I need the money.
I really am excited about this book. It's a really exciting read. It's hard to put down. Very hard to put down.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for your time and for your heart and for your journey, Hazel.
All right. God bless.
God bless you. Wow. Countdown to Coherence. It's interesting that Hazel Courtney uses the divine love or the love of the divine and forgiveness on all levels as the core issue for our coherence. Studies have been done on that. I just finished rereading the autobiography of a yogi and followed it swiftly by a written for Westerners version of the Bhagavad Gita. And in both cases, they're talking about focusing on the divinity in everything. And I've been diligently doing that, finding it very, very uplifting. And she's just amped that up. I hope you enjoyed this show. Please let me know, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. Again, that's veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. If you have suggestions for other guests, or if you'd like a session with me and my guides and angels, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. Thank you for listening. Good night.